welcome back to Sammy, and he should have a nechama. We're on Daf Tzadites, and we're just about to start the Mishnah, but we have one little piece of Gemara, which has to do with Kvod Rabo, but we'll fit it in just to finish the Mashlin. Amar Eish Lakish. So this is four lines up before the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadites Amin Aleph. Kiach Bifnei Rabo, he coughs up a phlegm and he spits it out in the presence of his Rebbe Chayav Misa. God should take his life. Shenemar, Kol Misanai Avu Moves, a Pasuk of Mishle, that those who are, so to speak, fiends or adversaries of God should love death. In other words, they should suffer death. Al tikri misanai ela masniai. So he's changing the vocalization of the word, and he's reading it as masniai. And what does masniai mean? So again, the pasuk is not referring to those who hate the Torah itself, but masniai, it's as if they are making the Torah despicable for others. And the Torah is saying that those who are masnian OC, in other words, they do things that are absolutely repulsive, then they deserve what's called aninus das, or what we'd say is they're kind of making the Torah into something lower. They're lowering the eyes and the respect of the Torah. Is Ovim es hamoves u'ma'abdim es nafshom. They deserve to die. And that's because the koach of standing bifnei rabo and making dvarim me'usim bifnei rabo, that's a zilzul in the Torah. And for that kind of zilzul, the Torah yechayev misa. So the Gemara asks the obvious question about Menas Anis. What should he do? You know, he's got phlegm in his mouth, this keach. So what should he do with it, this keach? So the Gemara answers, even if he's, you know, a lot of people have, you know, when they have colds and so forth and so on, they have allergies, so they're full of all this phlegm. So the Gemara says, keach v'rok kamrinon. Instead of walking at a distance to get rid of the phlegm in his mouth in the presence of his Rebbe, he actually spits out his phlegm, and that's not called onus. The Gemara had asked, menas anus, these are circumstances beyond his control. He definitely has control over it. He should have found a different place to spit out his phlegm. He should have been mesalik himself from his Rebbe, but if he does it in front of his Rebbe, again, he could have taken a handkerchief if he had one and just blow it out into his handkerchief. But he did it in a way that was bold and brazen and chutzpahdik. And this is called making the Torah ma'us. And the Talmud Chacham and his Rebbe sort of represents the Torah itself. And now he's being mezalzel in the Torah. Okay, that leads us to the new Mishnah here on the bottom of Daf Tzadites Amud Aleph. Now, our Mishnah is very similar to the previous Mishnah. We're talking about someone who stands on Shabbos in one Rishus, but instead of stretching his arm out, as it was in the first Mishnah, to move something from one location to the other in a different Rishus, he actually projects his neck, his head, into another Rishus. He's got water to drink in another Rishus. He's standing, let's say, in Rishus HaYochid. He wants to now project his head into Rishus HaRabim and drink from water that's flowing in Rishus HaRabim from some sort of a source of water. Is the Mishnah says, Lo Yaman Adam B'Rishus HaYochid V'Yishte B'Rishus HaRabim. Because once he stretches his neck out into Rishus HaRabim, we're afraid, and this is the Gzeres Chachamim, that he is going to, instead of drinking water from directly from his mouth to that source of water, he's going to take a kli, he's going to want to collect the water in a utensil, and once he does that, he's going to violate a meleches chatos in one of two directions, either because he carries out the kli from Rishus HaYochid out to Rishus HaRabim, or he brings the kli back inside the Rishus HaYochid from the Rishus HaRabim. So because he's drinking, which technically would be mutter, directly from the source of water, but we're afraid that he might come to bring a kli and collect the water inside the kli. Similarly, a person should not stand Rishus HaRabim, v'yishta Rishus HaYochid. Again, he might be tempted to use a kli and carry the kli from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid in order to gather together the water. Elim Kain, unless he makes a shinui. If he does it in a very, very unusual way, then we're not afraid that he'll make the jump, he'll make the confused analogy and allow himself the leisure of using a kli. And that's what? Hichnis rosho verubo lemakom shushose. If he pushes not just his neck out, his head out, but his entire body, in such a case, he will remind himself, it's a heker, that today is Shabbos. He's doing it in a way that normally he wouldn't do it. It's a very uncomfortable way of drinking water. Imagine you have your feet, you know, firmly attached to the ground, and your entire body leans, or rov your body leans into another rishus in order to drink. That's going to be enough to remind him that it's Shabbos, and for sure he's not allowed to take a kli from Rishus HaYochid, Rishus HaRabim, or vice versa. The Mishnah ends up with two words that seem to float in mid-air, in space, have nothing to do with the rest of the Mishnah. V'chein begas. Now, the Gemara is going to explain that this halach of Rosho Verubo applies in a case of a gas, and we're talking about a place where he wants to drink wine that hasn't yet been subject to Afrosis, Trumas, and Maestris. And he's only allowed to do that in what's called a Derech Aroi, because it's Tevel, in a sense. Well, it's not really Tevel, it's only Tevel Durabonon, because Tevel Doraisa requires that he take the grapes and the wine and bring it into his house. That's called Rias Pnei Abayis. But in any event, again, we're going to get into this in a few minutes, but just as an introduction, there's something called Tevel Durabonon, which means the Rabbanon said you're not allowed to drink Beofen Keva. You're only allowed to drink it Beofen Aroi. And this person, when he's standing outside the gas, and the gas is where they crush the grapes, if he stretches his head out into the gas to drink Yayin, then he's got to do it in a way that is unusual, which is going to be Rosho Verubo B'toch HaGas, and that's going to make it into a Shtia of Derech HaRoy, and the Gemara is going to explain this a little bit later on. The Havamin of Asugya is going to try very hard to assume that V'chein B'Gas is shedding a light on the Shabbos Halacha. This is not just a Shatnez kind of Mishnah, where the Mishnah of Achim Bagas all of a sudden drops the ball on Hilchos Shabbos and enters into the halachas of Trumas and Maisers and Tevel. The Gemara is going to try to somehow insist that V'chein Bagas is going to shed a light on our Mishnah with regard to the laws of Hotzah and Shabbos. Now we start the Sugya. The Gemara now is going to try to attempt to reconcile our Mishnah that we're studying here on the bottom of Tzadi Tes with the Mishnah back on Daf Tzadi Ches. Because the Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Ches had no compunctions about standing in one Rishus and carrying something in another Rishus from one place to the other. And there was no fear, there was no gzera that he might bring that object into his rishus, which means violating the malach d'oraisa of hotzah. Our Mishnah here on Daf Tzadites, on the other hand, has this gzera that he may take a kli in order to drink the water. So the Gemara says the following, Reisha Rabbanan v'sefer Rabbi Meir. Reisha meaning the Mishnah on Daf Tzadites, on Daf Tzadiches, the previous Mishnah, reflects the Shita of Rabbanan, which means that we don't have a gzera and we're not afraid that if we allow you to carry, to relocate an object, when you're standing in one rishus and you stretch your arm out into a different rishus, you're allowed to relocate the object in that rishus from place to place, and we're not afraid that you might come to bring it into your own rishus where you are standing. So we're very much committed to the position that he remembers it Shabbos. He's not going to forget it Shabbos. And then we're going to have to say that this Sefer that we're learning today is authored by Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir has a gzera. Now, where is this Rabbi Meir that we should say the Sefer is Rabbi Meir? Again, you could always say Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, but that's not going to help me here, because we have the previous Mishnah which allows you to relocate the object when you're standing in different shuls, and that also is a Stam Mishnah. So to say that there's Rabbanan here and Rabbi Meir here, there must be some background to this whole discussion. So Rashi sends us to a sugya on Daf Kuf Aleph, which is two blot away from us. We didn't get to that yet. And there the sugya quotes Rabbi Meir specifically as holding that Osu Liodnum HaOmei B'Rishus Achas Litol Mafteach HaNimtza B'Rishus Acheres V'Liftoch Shom Delis. So he's standing, let's say, in a Rishus HaYochid, and in front of him, in a Rishus HaRavim, there's a closet and it's locked up, and there's a key on the floor. Is he allowed to just simply pick up the key as he's standing in Rishus HaYochid, pick it up from the ground of Rishus HaRavim in order to open up and unlock the door, which is in Rishus HaRavim? And Rabbi Meir says, we're not going to allow you to do that. Why? Because we're afraid that a person might be tempted to take the key and put it in his pocket. Well, the key is located in Rishus HaRavim. His pocket is in Rishus HaYochid. He would violate Melech HaShabbos. So we see the Rabbi Meir makes a gzera that a person might forget himself and think it's okay and violate Melech HaSotzah on Shabbos. He's not aware of the fact that it's Shabbos. And that's Rabbi Meir's Shita. The Rabbanan allow you to pick up this key in Rishus HaRabim and open up the closet that's in Rishus HaRabim. So that would be reflected by our Mishnah, previous Mishnah on Daf Tzadiches, that allows you to stand in one Rishus and move and relocate objects in another Rishus. And we're not afraid that you'll take those objects back to you. Here in our Mishnah on Tzadites, which prohibits you from drinking if you're standing in one Rishus, Rishus HaYochid, and drinking in another Rishus, Rishus HaRavim, we're afraid that you might take a kli if you forget yourself and you don't realize it's Shabbos and extend that kli out to Rishus HaRavim to drink. So we don't allow you to drink without a kli, because tomorrow or next Shabbos you might drink with a kli and violate Melech HaSotzah. That's absolutely similar to the case where in the Mafteach, Rabbi Meir doesn't allow you to take the Mafteach and open up the closet in Rishus HaRavim when you're sitting in Rishus HaYochid, because you might forget it Shabbos and bring and take the Mafteach back to you. So this is a little bit bothersome. Again, we usually get used to the fact that our Mishnah is printed here, and then there's a Sugya Sigmar here, and then there's a Mishnah there. But as you and I know very well, all the Mishnahs are one together. So to say that this Mishnah starts with Chachamim, who are lenient and they're not worried about a person forgetting about it Shabbos, they don't have this gzera, and then the Mishnah continues by reflecting the Shita Rabbi Meir, who has the gzera, we're always afraid that you might forget it Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Om Rav Yosef, let's reconcile the two Mishnayos. It's not that the Chachamim completely reject the Gzera, and under all circumstances, the Rabbanan are very confident and comfortable with assuming that he'll remember Shabbos. Oh. There are certain situations where we cross the red line, and even the Chachamim will have to agree and accept the Gzera that he might take it to him, back to him, to the other Rishus, violate Melechus Otzah, and forget his Shabbos. What case do the Rabbanan agree to? And that's b'chafetzim hatzrichim lo, and that's diriyakol. Even the chacham amode, that a person cannot stand in one rishus and carry something into, you know, and relocate it within the confines of another rishus, and we are afraid that he might take it to him because it's chafetzim shetzrichim lo. So our Mishnah would be a classic example of chafetzim shetzrichim lo. He needs to drink, and in order to drink, he may need a kli. He may want to take a utensil in order to facilitate his ability to drink. The chachamim, therefore, says Rav Yosef, would agree that in this case we have to institute a gzera that he might use a kli instead of his mouth, instead of stretching his mouth out. And therefore, our Mishnah here, the Sefer, could be reconciled with the Chachamim Shita. So if I have an object that has to get from one place to the other, and I'm standing in a different Rishus, the Chacham say we don't have to make a Gzera, but let's say I need that object. Not that I want to relocate the object, but I need that object for myself. And then there are different methods or ways in which I can get and enjoy the benefit of that object. I could do it either by stretching my head out and drinking directly from the source of water, or I can use a kli to do so. I might be tempted to use a kli to do so. Why? Because it's one of my own needs. It's called chafetzim shetzrichim lo. If he needs something, then there's a temptation for him to bring it to himself in the most convenient and comfortable way. And if he wants access to drinking the water through a kli, that's what he might do. The Rabbanu would also agree in this case that we should institute a gzera. But if the need of the object is in the second rishus, it's not that he needs it for himself, for his own body, he just needs that that object be relocated in that other rishus, the Chacham are not going to say that he's going to now take it to himself. So if he needs the mafteach to get from here to here in order to open up the closet, we're not afraid that he'll take the mafteach for himself. If, for example, he needs to relocate there's a piece of food and he wants to feed his dog, so he wants to take it from this point in Mishus HaRabim and give it to his dog two amos away, I mean, he's not carrying it 4 amos in Mishus HaRabim, then we're not afraid that he's going to take the dog food for himself. But if he has to eat the food and it's human food, then to say that, well, we'll allow you to stretch your head out and eat the food over there, and we're not afraid that you would bring it back to yourself, here even the Rabbanu would agree to Rabbi Meir. Now, the next sugya, which is really the same sugya, but I call it a different sugya in the sense that it really opens up a whole issue in Shas, which we call Kol D'Tikun Rabbanu Kein D'Oraisa Tikun, and the whole issue of what we call Gzera L'Gzera. So let's say, for example, in a case where, like our Mishnah, where he might mistakenly violate a Meleches Otzah D'Oraisa, we understand that the Gzera is Atu, a violation, a possibility of violating a D'Oraisa. What happens if, in the worst case scenario, he would take out the water or draw the water to himself with a kli, but he would only violate a D'Rabbanan? So again, what he's doing, even if he's in a Rishus HaYochid and the water is in Rishus HaRabim, he's not violating a D'Oraisa because he's drinking it in Rishus HaRabim. He's not carrying anything into Rishus HaYochid. There's a Gzera, but the Gzera means he might violate a D'Oraisa by taking a kli from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. But what happens if he's standing in a Karmelis? So even in the worst case scenario, if instead of stretching his head out from the Carmel to Sarabin, he grabs the water with a kli, and now he's taking it from a Carmel to Sarabin, he still has not violated a Doraisa. Shall we equate a Carmelis with a Rishus HaYochid as if it were a violation of a Doraisa when it's not, ignoring the fact that there's no violation, no possibility of a violation of a Doraisa? Ibailu Carmelis Mat. What's the deal with a Carmelis? Should we insist on Xera that a person should not be standing in a Carmelis and drinking in a Rishus HaYochid or Rishus HaRabim, and that is not? Or let's say he's standing in a Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaYochid and he wants to stretch his arm out into a Carmelis and his head out into a Carmelis to drink from a Carmelis. Here, in the worst case scenario, the violation of the Isra Tzor would only be and could only be a Derabbanan. Shall we say that the Rabbanan asa this even in such a case where the worst, if our fears would come to fruition, and the Xera would be this, to avoid a what? A violation of an Issa Rabbanon. And Omer Abaye, he. This is counterintuitive. Abaye says, what difference does it make? Again, I'm dramatizing it a little in my own language, but what difference does it make whether he's in a Carmelis or he's in a Rishus HaRabin or Rishus HaYochid? I mean, once the Rabbanon asa the Carmelis, all the dinim and all the prohibitions that apply to Rishus HaYochid, or to Rishus HaRabim for that matter, apply to a Carmelis. So therefore, says Abai, he, the same din and the same Xera that prohibits you from standing in one Rishus and stretching your arm out, your head out, to drink in another Rishus would apply even if he's standing in a Carmelis. So he's not allowed to stand in a Carmelis, according to Abai. Stick his head out into Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaYochid, it makes no difference, and drink. On my Rava, what are you talking about? He zguf xera v'anan nekem v'nigzah xeru l'xera? The whole issue of a Carmelis is only xera. We're afraid that a Carmelis might be confused with a Rishus HaRabim. It's a very large area, and it's open, it's a field, a bika, anyone has access to it. So even though it's not a Rishus HaRabim, it's not Tezayin Ama, and it doesn't have Shishim Ribui, whatever conditions we need are lacking. So technically, a Carmelis is not a Rishus HaRabim. So we're afraid that a person might confuse a Carmelis with Rishus HaRabim. If you allow him to carry in a Carmelis, tomorrow he'll carry in Rishus HaRabim. Now you're telling me that we're not going to allow him to drink when he's standing in a Carmelis and he's stretching his head out into a Rishus HaRabim because he might take it with a kli. Well, even if he took it with a kli, so what? On a Torah level, there's no problem with carrying from Rishus HaRabim, or for that matter, from Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelis. Carmelis is neither a Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaYochid on a Doraisa level. That itself, meaning Carmelis, is a Gzera. So now you're piling up one Gzera on top of another Gzera. And Rabosai, the truth is that Rava is 100% correct, not 99%. He's 100% correct. There's no way we could justify Abai. Normally, when you raise the question of Gzera L'Gzera, so you answer, well, Kulachad Gzerahi. But what do you mean Kulachad Gzerahi? These are two separate independent Gzeros. One has nothing to do with the other. One has to do with the fact that if you allow him to drink with his mouth directly, he'll come to use a kli. And that's one system or one method of instituting Xer. The other has to do with Shini Rishuyos. You know, maybe one person might consider a Carmelis a Rishus HaRabim, the other says, well, it's privately owned, and therefore it's Rishus HaYochid. And we're worried about confusing Rishuyos. That's not the same as confusing drinking from your mouth with drinking from a kli. So that Xera Achasi, which is your classic answer, is very, 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 very difficult. Now, it's really interesting because Abaye, in response to Rava, does not try to argue with Rava and say, well, I have a Svara, and your application of this principle of Ein Gozer and Gzera L'Gzera is offbeat. But rather, Abaye says, what am I going to do with our Mishnah. Amar Abai, Minoa Minile, Minit Ktoni. Here we're turning to Tzadi's test of the days. V'chein Begas. Now watch this. Abaye understood that the words V'chein Begas are not some sort of, as we called it, a shatnez, and they somehow got stuffed in our Mishnah because of some very far out analogy and similarity, but rather V'chein Begas is shedding a light on our Mishnah, and the gas is a caramelus. Now, we're going to have to take a minute of time to figure out why a gas is a caramelus, but, you know, just to get the structure of the Gemara, let's leave it as a, we'll drop that premise as a emunas chachamim. If the gas is a caramelus, the Mishnah went out of its way to add v'chein begas, as if to say v'chein becaramelus, meaning that the same gzera that applies to Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRam applies even in the case of a caramelus. And that's what V'chein Begas is all about. Again, you can ask me, well, what about Ein Gozrim Gzeira L'Gzeira? So Abai says, okay, I'm going to step aside. I don't know the answer to your question, Rava. I don't have right now a logical counter-argument to justify why in this case the Rabbanon instituted a Gzeira on top of a Gzeira. I cannot answer that question. But what I can do is prove from the Mishnah that even in the case of a caramelus, the Gzeira applies, because that's why the Mishnah added V'chein Begas. And what Rav is going to do is he's going to take his scissors and he's going to cut out V'chein Begas. And those two words belong to Mishnayos in Zroim, in Maisers and Trumas. That has nothing to do with that Mishnah. Now, I would just like to suggest one possibility here. And again, as I always say, you're the jury, you can decide whether you like it or you don't. But maybe caramelus is a different kind of gzeira. Meaning, we can always ask the following question. Do we define the gzeira by the reasoning behind the gzeira? In other words, what motivated the gzeira? Or do we say that what motivated the gzeira is only the backdrop, but it doesn't define the gzeira itself? In the case of a caramelus, what did the Rabbanan establish? Did they say that a caramelus is a gzeira? Meaning, well, if you're going to carry from a Rishus HaRab into a caramelus or vice versa, then you're going to come to carry from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid. And every time we apply the principle of caramelus and we institute the Iser caramelus, we're going to say that the logic that motivated this enactment and the Gzera itself, because statistically there's X number of possibilities, 10% chance that you'll make the jump and you'll violate an Iser al Tzad or Raisa. And that's the way the Iser caramelus works. Every case of a caramelus is simply an application of a statistical fear, if you will, a probability theory that he might come to violate a d'oraisa. Or no. True, I grant you, that the reason why the Chachamim were motivated to make this enactment of a caramelus is because they were afraid that you might confuse a caramelus with Rishus HaRabim or with Rishus HaYochid. But nevertheless, the Rabbanan took it one step further, and they defined it as a Rishus HaRab, as a Rishus HaYochid. They superimposed the status of Rishuyos onto the caramelus. On a Doraisa level, the caramelus is a Makom Patur. But the Rabbanan said, nay, the caramelus, Mid Rabbanan, is a Rishus HaRab. And the Nafkamina is that now if I upgrade the status of the Gzera of caramelus to a Rishus, then all the dinim that would apply to that Rishus, all the gzeros that apply to that Rishus, now ipso facto apply to the caramelus as well. So as Rav understood that caramelus is nothing more than a classic gzera, and in every case of a caramelus, basically the chachamim are motivated to prohibit because they're afraid of, then to join that with another fear that he might use a kli, That's already Xeril Xeib. And that cannot be. We're going to have to take Vechei Begas and send it flying to Hilchus Meisers. Abai understood, nein, this Xera of Kamalus is a unique kind of Xera. It's not a Xera where we always have to measure what are the statistical probabilities that Shema, perhaps, he might do X and violate it d'oraisa. Nein. That's not what we're going to do. When we apply the Halach of Kamalus, we're going to define it as a new Rishus. And all the dinim that apply to that Rishus, ipso facto, apply to the Karmelis. I'll give you another example. What would Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, say about Karmelis Bein HaShmoshos? Right, we have a principle of Rabbi that called Masha Asru Chacham Yishum Shvus, Lo Asru Bein HaShmoshos. It's Mutter Bein HaShmoshos. What would he say about a Karmelis? If I define Karmelis and classify it as a classic Zera, well, Rebbe says that Gzeros were not instituted during Bein HaShemosh. It would be mutter to carry from a Karmelis to Rishus HaRabim during Bein HaShemosh, according to Rebbe. But if on the other hand I'm saying that a Karmelis has a status of a Rishus HaRabim Midrabanan, then that has nothing to do with Rebbe. Because here the Shvus completely transformed the nature of this Rishus, meaning the Karmelis, and upgraded to a status of a Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaYoch. And that would apply even Bein HaShemoshos. And my Rebbe used to always tell us that in every case where you have a motivating reason behind the halacha, you always have to figure out whether that motivating reason accompanies the halacha at every stage. Or at some point, you know, you cut the umbilical cord and the halacha stands on its own 2 feet. For example, again, just an example that comes to mind, if you don't mind. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik once raised the question that women should be obligated in tefillin. Why? Because the Torah says that... No, just 1 second. Just the other way around. The Gemara says that women are potter from tefillin. Why? Because the mitzvah says shazman grama. And we learned this by Richus, if you recall, that it depends on whether, you know, Laila lives on tefillin or Shabbos lives on tefillin. Frank Reb Moshe, I have another reason why women should be exempt from tefillin, because the Torah says in the Parsha tefillin, Laman tia Torah Hashem b'ficha, and there's an equation between Torah, meaning the study of Torah, and tefillin. So if women are exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, then ipso facto they should be exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. Why does the Gemara have to go through somersaults in the air? And Enoch Hinami, according to one sheet in the Gemara, women are obligated in tefillin because the mitzvah says laws man groma. They should be pturos because of laman tia teres Hashem b'ficha. And the Rav answered, laman tia teres Hashem b'ficha might be the reason. I think the Rav used the word the yisod, maybe the reasoning behind the Torah why we wear tefillin. But tefillin becomes a mitzvah unto itself. And we no longer have to analyze in every situation, well, is there an obligation to study Torah? Then, if so fact, I'm chayiv in tefillin. If there's no obligation, I'm not chayiv in tefillin. Tefillin stands on its own 2 feet. And perhaps this touches also on our discussion once about Erev Tchumen. Whether or not you apply Safik Derabbanan Lekula to Erev Tchumen, if you hold Tchumen Derabbanan. And the Gemara clears back and forth, Yesh lo ikir mena Torah, Ein lo ikir mena Torah. It could be that certain Derabbanans take on a whole new status when there's a Yesh lo ikir mena Torah. So Mukta, for example, the Gemara calls at the beginning of Beitza, Ein lo ikir mena Torah. So then it's a pure Derabbanan from A to Z. But you may have other Derabbanans which gain the status of a quasi Doraisa because it's Ke'ein Doraisa Tikkun, it's Yesh lo ikir mena Torah. So it could be that in certain cases where the Rabbanan extended, let's say, for example, Maris Ayin. So we have halacha called Kol Masha Asur Chacham Yishu Maris Ayin Asur Afilu B'Chadri Chador. Does that apply even to the Rabbanans, which is a major sugya in Masechta Shabbos? You know, with the guy who's he's shaking out his talis, and people are thinking that he dried it, he washed his talis, so does he have to do it low kenegadam or kenegadam? You know, all these kinds of discussions. So it could be that if, in the worst case scenario, they're suspecting him of a Drabanan, then we don't have to worry about Chadri Chadorim. That would also be like Xeril. But if, on the other hand, we're saying that once the Rabbanan asked it, it became an Iser Bifnei Atzmo, then we have to worry about Maris Ayin for that kind of a Drabanan to the same extent that we would for a Doraisa. So let's get back to our sugya. I took a little bit of a tiyul. And we're going to talk about V'chein Bagas according to Abaye, and then we'll get to V'chein Bagas according to Rav. Abaye understands V'chein Bagas is a case where you have mechitzos. The mechitzos are higher than 3 tefachim, but lower than 10 tefachim. Now, any area that is within Rishus HaRabim, below 10 tefachim, is considered part of Rishus HaRabim, unless it has mechitzos. Now, if these mechitzos are 10 tefachim high, then you could have Rishus HaYochid, that's a confined and circumscribed area within Rishus HaRabim. However, in this case of Agas, his mechitzos are less than 10 tefachim high. And add to that, that the area that's, just one second, so again, number one, we have mechitzas. Okay, so what makes it a caramel? Let's just go over this, is the mechitzos are less than 10 tefachim high. Now, if the mechitzas are less than 3 tefachim, that's already a different halacha. That's ki ara smichta domi. That means that the karka rises up to 3 tefachim. So then, it would be a rishus harabim do rise. What makes it into a caramel is, the mechitzas go above 3 tefachim, so this area is circumscribed by mechitzos. It cannot be considered rishus hayochid, because the mechitzas are not gvos asora. And he's standing in a Rishus HaYochid, and he wants to drink from the gas. So the gas has wine in it, and he's drinking the wine by stretching his head out into the gas. The gas itself, says Abai, is a caramelis. Why? Because it's in a Rishus HaRabim, but it doesn't have Mechitzas Gvoetz Yud. But it does have mechitzas that are above 3 tefachim, which separates it from the Rishus HaRabim. Now, if we would take a kli, so instead of, you know, drinking wine directly from the gas, he scoops up the wine in a utensil, then he carries that utensil from a Rishus HaYochid into a caramelis. And that's what the Mishnah wants to tell me. Don't drink by stretching your head out into the gas and drinking directly from the gas, because you might come to use a kli and draw the wine back into Rishus HaYochid, or take the kli from Rishus HaYochid into the caramelis, and v'chein begas, meaning the Mishnah is telling you that that's also, just like you can't drink when you're standing in Rishus HaRabim, you can't stretch your arm out, your head out, and drink in Rishus HaRabim, or vice versa, so too you can't do that in a gas. And the Mishnah wants to be Chadesh, that a person, if he stands in Rishus HaRabim and he stretches his head out into the gas, which is a caramelis, and he drinks from the caramelis, then he violates Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. So you see, says Abai to Rava, that there's no ein goes from Gzeirah L'Gzeirah with regard to a caramelis. He writes here in the footnote, Lefi Abaye, Kavana Satana B'Masha Omar V'Chein B'Gas, he lesser shtia b'karmelis. V'yesh lahavin madua hutzach hatana linkod v'chein b'gas kidei lashmia din zeh. So now the question is, this the Bach wants to know, Koit Habai, why doesn't the Mishnah just say v'chein b'karmelis? Vos epes gas? So the Bach says that Abai understood that V'chein Begas has two purposes. You know, the Bala Mishnah, right, the Rabbi Yudanasi, when he authored the Mishnah, He had two. He wanted to accomplish two goals. You know, to kill two birds with one stone by saying v'chein begas instead of saying v'chein bekarmelis. So on the one hand, v'chein begas is relevant to Hilchas Shabbos because the gas is a karmelis, as we discussed before. On the other hand, instead of using the word karmelis, he used the word gas to teach us halacha in Hilchas Masros. Whereas Rav is going to say, no, it can't be that this v'chein begas is relevant to Shabbos and says v'chein bekarmelis, because that would be a violation of that principle of ein gozin gzeira l'gzeira. Now, my only question is, does the Bach give us any clue why, according to Rava, it's ma'od muzar that Rebbe would add v'chein begas as halach and maisus if it doesn't shed any light on Hilchas Shabbos? So let me just read this one more time. He says, just one second. No, I don't see it. So right now we're going to leave that as an outstanding question. Why Rava would have it that this Mishnah really belongs to Masechet Maisros? Rava Amar Le'inyan Maaseh V'chein Rav Sheshes V'chein Begas Le'inyan Maaseh. So now we're going to take a little bit of an excursion into the laws of Maaseh. Tisnan. So the Mishnah in the fourth parak of Maaser wants to talk about something that has no re'ias p'nei abayis, in which case you're not allowed to drink shtias kva, but you're allowed to drink a shtias aroy, because midoraisa it's not called tevel before it was taken out of the gas into the bayis. And the Mishnah says shosim. Okay, so here we have a three-way machlokas. Now, we're going to have two extremes and then a compromise sheet in the middle. So the first shita, this is Rabbi Meir, is the most extreme shita lekula. And shosim alagas is, what's the word I want to use, is absolute, without any exception. Which means, bein b'mayim, b'chamin, u'bein b'tzone. Now, yayin, and we've discussed this on many occasions, in its original natural form, is very concentrated, and it's hardly drinkable. You have to do what's called meziga. So you've got to add water to the yayin. Now, there are two types of water that you could add to the yayin. There's hot water and there's cold water. Now, in the time of the Gemara, since the water was very concentrated, and they would have to dilute, I'm sorry, the wine was very concentrated, they'd have to dilute it with water in order to drink it. Then the question is, does he dilute it in a way where he could decide later on that he wants to put it back into the gas? So that we'll have to organize a bunch of rules here, a bunch of principles. One principle is that achilas, or in this case, shtias, keva, will be determined by the fact that he takes the yayin out of the gas in an irreversible, irreplaceable way. In other words, there's no possibility of his putting the yayin back into the gas. If that be the case, then it's asur. That's called a shtias keva. So right now we're studying Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that even in a case where he dilutes the wine with hot water, or warm water, he could still decide to replace the yayin back into the gas. So he hasn't removed the yayin in a permanent way, and when he drinks, therefore, that's not called a shtias keva, that's called a shtias arot. So again, even though, says Rabbi Meir, even though he took the yayin out of the gas, and if you ask me what his intention is, he certainly had no intention of putting the yayin back into the gas. Therefore, just 1 second, Rabbi Meir says what? Patur? In other words, we're going to consider the possibility that he would decide to put the yayin back into the gas. He says in the name of the Yerushalmi that the water is warm, that he's adding to dilute, but it's not roseach. The Yerushalmi says that the water here is called chamin, but it's not yad sol lettuce by him. So what we're going to see is that if he adds water that's yad sol lettuce bo, according to this Yerushalmi, and then he would decide to add or replace the wine back into the gas, that would cause kilkul v'yachmitz hayayin. So that Rabbi Meir says, well, he's not using mayim roschim, which is yad sol lettuce bo, and therefore, even though there's a possibility that by returning the yayin back into the gas, he may ruin the yayin, but nevertheless, he could do it in a way in which it won't destroy, it won't be makalkil the yayin. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik Mechayev, Rabbi Elazar besides says that once you add the water to dilute the yayin, it doesn't matter, this is the other extreme of Chumra, whether or not he uses cold water or warm water, the very fact that he dilutes the wine is an act of machshiva es hashtia l'shtias keva. He himself makes this shtia into a serious shtia. Now, it's the very fact that he didn't just grab some wine and drink it, but he went through the entire process of diluting the wine. That indicates that he is drinking the wine as a shtia kvua. So even though you might say, well, he's only drinking it in the gas, you know, let's say he's an employee, and, you know, it's the employer allows him to drink a little bit of wine as he's working in the gas, and therefore it should be considered a shtias aroi. So the answer is, says Rabbi Eliezer, no, the very fact that he does a meziga and he perfects the wine in a way that it's now very, you know, tasty, that itself makes it into a shtias keva. Chachomim omrim, this is the middle compromise shita between the two extremes of Rabbi Meir on the one hand and Rabbi Lez on the other hand, is al chamin chayov v'al tzonein pot. If he adds warm water to dilute the wine, then that's called an umdana, that's called a hochacha, that his intention is not to return the yayin into the gas. Why? Because he'll take a risk that by adding warm water into the wine, it causes fermentation and the wine could spoil and he could lose the whole gas. So therefore, the very moment that he dilutes the wine with warm water and makes a declaration, so to speak, that he's not going to return the wine into the gas, the wine is now permanently removed from the gas, that makes his shtia into a shtias keva, and that's us. But tzonein, if he only dilutes the wine with luke or temperature water, which is not warmed water, then we consider it as if he might return the wine into the gas, and therefore his shtia is a shtias aroi and it's mutter. And that's called, in the language of the Chachamim, in this Mishnah, Mipnei Shemachzir Es HaMosar. So I guess what happens is, if I understand correctly, he takes out some wine from the gas, pours off some of the wine, and step by step, he starts adding cold water, but he doesn't necessarily drink all the wine that he took out, and he's still connected back to the gas. And that's called Shemachziras HaMosar. Mosar means what's ever left from the wine. So he took out, as I said before, a volume of wine from the gas, which obviously increases when he adds the water to dilute it. And there's going to be, according to Chachamim, a nosar. There's going to be a certain vestige of wine, of remaining wine, that he doesn't need. And will he pour it back into the gas? And the answer is yes. He will pour it back into the gas because it has no danger of causing fermentation and ruining the gas, because he only mixed it with cold water. In any event, let's just summarize. According to Rava, these two words in our Mishnah V'chein Begas have nothing to do with Shabbos, because a gas has the status of a karmelis and of a person standing in Rishus HaRabim, and he wants to drink from a karmelis or vice versa, that's perfectly permissible, because what are you afraid of? He'll use a kli. Well, ein gozrin gzera l'gzera. But the gas is a discussion about maser. Now, at this point, I think we can answer the Bach's question. What is going on here that the Mishnah, according to Rava, adds v'chein begas, which really is a tag on to a Mishnah in Maisras? What is it doing here? And perhaps the answer is that a person is standing on karka, his feet are grounded outside the gas. He wants to stretch his head into the gas to drink without being mafresh maser. And what we're going to say is the following. According to this possibility, again, I take it with limited liability, that we're going to allow him to do this, but we need to make sure that he remembers that he needs Hafrashas Trumas and Masras. In other words, on a psychological level, there's a certain amount of confusion here, of ambiguity. On the one hand, we're allowing him to drink from the gas, and in his mind, we're communicating to him a message that this yayin does not need hafrashas trumas and maisers. Again, if he's a great Talmud Chacham and he's a big lamdin, so he realizes that the Chacham allowing me to drink from the gas because it's only a shtiyas aroi, and he's very well aware of the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Maisros and the distinction between Shtiyas Aroi and Shtiyas Keva. But if he's not such a great scholar, he may come to the conclusion that this is a normal case, and for some reason this Yayin is potter from Trusa Maisros. He'll take it home, you know, he gets his allowance for the day of X number of bottles of wine, and he's going to drink the wine, you know, and invite his guests and make a hoopla, you know, make a siyum on some masechta, and he's not going to be mafresh trumas and maisers. So we need a heker. We need something to remind him that his allowance, the permissibility to drink from this gas, is an unusual and restricted permissibility. And that's going to require rosho verubo bagas. He is standing with his feet outside the gas. He is stretching his head out into the gas. That's not enough. My friend, you're not allowed to drink from the gas. Unless you project your body into the gas. That's going to give him, you know, a simon yored, as we say, that's going to give him a reminder that this is unusual circumstances. Now let's see if we can read this into Rashi. Rashi, just 1 second. Rashi says, a long Rashi. I don't know if we need the whole Rashi. Slow Mashli kind of Dilma Shasi Hilka cover the Shasi Abramasnis and the Uktani. Let's just see if we can fit this in. The Chain Begas Tani Lo Yamod Al Gabi Karkav Yishta Begas. Oh, there it is. You know, there are two Mishnayos on this. Actually, there are three Mishnayos on this page. But if you take a look before the second Mishnah in Rashi, do you see that last line in Rashi, before the word Masnisen, and it says, Elim Kein Hichnis Rosho Verubo Legas. I'm suggesting, and I'm willing, well, I shouldn't say this, to stake my reputation on this, that Rashi is trying to answer the kasha of the Bach, which is our kasha. I mean, we don't need the Bach for this kasha. Vos epis, why would the Mishnah mention v'chein begas if it has nothing to do with the caramelist and when you're allowed to carry on Shabbos and so forth and so on? It's a maisris halacha. Oh, the answer is that our Mishnah sets a precedent for the Mishnah in Maaseh. And as a result of that precedent, the halacha of the Mishnah in Maaseh of Shosim Alagas changes radically. We thought that Shosim Alagas, again, man kidisle or mar kidisle, whether it's, you know, diluted it this way, diluted it that way, but it's an absolute heter. Whatever conditions are necessary in terms of the dilution process is let him stand wherever he stands and drink from the gas. And it's a shtias aroi. No. We have to add a heker. Where do we find a source, a precedent for a heker? Right here in Masechta Erevin, this Mishnah dealing with Shabbos. And that Mishnah is telling me that if you're standing in one Rishus and you want to project your head into another Rishus and drink, we need a heker. Otherwise, we're afraid that you're going to make a big boo-boo and you're going to take it with a kli and violate Melechus Otsa. What is the heker? Rosho Verubo. You've got to be very agile. I don't know if I could do it. Stand in one Rishus. Most of my body is in another Rishus and I'm drinking in the other Rishus. Well, it depends what Rosho Verubo means. But let's say Rosho Verubo would mean that, and again, it also depends on the distance to the water supply, but it might be that you have to be very agile to do this. You know, it's like standing on one foot, you know, but you have to move your whole body in and drink from the source of water. And in the case of a gas, he's got to stand outside the gas, but he's got to put Rosh Verubo, Rashi says, inside the gas, in order that he have a heker, that he should understand that this shtia is a shtia saroi. Again, he may not understand all of that, but he will understand that there are very specific restrictions and requirements in order to allow him to drink. So therefore, a person who's standing on the karka outside the gas and he wants to drink inside the gas without maser, we're going to require, says Rashi, Machnis Rosho Verubo Letocha Gas. Because again, if he's only Rosho Betocha Gas, we have to be afraid that, you know what, he's going to take this bottle home and he's going to drink it without Trumas and Masras. And he thinks that there's no difference between Shtias Aroi, Shtias Keva, it's all the same and it's all Mutter. So in order to convey and transmit the message to him that we're only allowing him in a very strange kind of Shtias Aroi situation, but Shtias Keva would require Hafrasha, we're going to stipulate that he has to have Rosh Verubo inside the gas. But again, this distinction only applies in a case where we're going, right, only in Masros, it has no application and no impact to Hilchos Shabbos, and therefore Rava insists that as far as Karmelist is concerned, we're going to apply the principle of Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira. Now just getting back to this Rashi that we made such a big deal about, when he says
the yishte begas below afroshas maser is only, he says, Ellen Kane hichnis rosha v'ruvel agas. What Rashi is saying is that the Mishnah makes no difference and no distinctions between how he accomplished the mezigas hayayin. It would seem that if he puts rosha v'ruvel inside, then he's allowed to drink this wine in the gas no matter what, unconditionally, whether or not he mixes it with hot water or with cold water. In other words, our Mishnah V'chein Begas really reflects the Shita Rabbi Meir, and if you'll ask how could Rabbi Meir allow a mixture of chamin as a dilution of this wine and still allow it and consider it a shtias aroi, the answer might be because it's Rosho V'rubo L'toch Hagas. Okay, then, we're up to the Mishnah. This is the first Mishnah of three Mishnayos on Daf Tzadi Tesem and Beis. And we are about six lines down from the top. And in Mitzvah Hashem, we'll continue this Mishnah tomorrow.